Joe Earth and I are starting a podcast. What should we call it?
Hey, don't pick on me. You know why? Because this is why. Let's see what he says.
The Joe Show?
Give Joe the business?
That's right.
Cup of Joe.
Cup of Joe.
What is happening here?
Would you listen?
We'll give you a chance.
Thank you.
That's Joe.
That's Rooster.
And this is the Together We Shall podcast, episode 46. What's up, bro?
Not much, man. How are you?
Dude, I love all the conversation before we actually hit record on our podcast. You were just telling me about what? You got to turn off all your Bluetooth to make sure your brain doesn't connect to Martians. Like what?
Yeah, basically. So there's this guy, and I feel very confident in saying his name because he has no time to listen to us rant and ramble and talk all kinds of fun things with our guests. But his original name was Carnivore MD on social. And I don't even know his real name now, but like he's a carnivore diet guy and he's all about it. And some of the things he says, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And I like to try it or do it or whatever. But he's got this one thing about like turning off. And he also lives in like 90% of the time, the like jungle of Costa Rica. But he turns off his Wi-Fi and his Bluetooth and everything at night to like stop the waves. And I'm like, I get it. Like, but if you just went 16 hours, like what's another 8 in my mind? But then like in the, like, I don't know, like some alarms aren't going to go off and then I'm going to have to like repair and do like, no. That like gives me anxiety thinking about like having to wake up and be like, pair. And then things don't pair. Yeah. Alexa's going crazy.
Whoa, be careful now. Listeners, we're going to jump right in. Joe can keep talking about Bluetooth and Wi-Fi for a while. And to me, I'm just dumbfounded by the idea that we actually think we need to turn all that stuff off. But then I'm like, no, maybe we should. And so I can get wrapped up in it. But look, bro, we got to jump into this episode, but we have to let the listeners know, in addition to turning off their Wi-Fi and their Bluetooth, they need to disable their Alexas because I don't want to be responsible. Without further ado, I think we should just jump into 46 and welcome our guest. But Alexa Burrows is here. What's up, lady? How are you?
Nice. Thank you guys for having me. And I've never heard that Alexa joke before. Funny. Just kidding. Every day.
Well, we didn't make it, but we didn't make the Alexa joke at you.
I know. And I did want to say that recently I switched to a Hatch alarm clock and it has changed my life.
Tell me more. What does that mean?
Google.
So it's like literally the best thing ever. Instead of like, you know, when you set your alarm on your phone and it's like beep, beep, like wakes you up like really, really aggressively. The Hatch is like a sunrise effect. So it's with light and sound. So it like gradually wakes you up with like a sunrise. And it's just such a nicer way to wake up. It's really changed the game. Highly recommend. Wow.
Joe is Googling it, Amazoning it, doing all the things.
I've seen it before, maybe not, but I didn't realize they were expensive like that.
There's a few dupes. There's a few dupes on.
Yeah.
Online.
Yeah, but we heard about dupes. Like what? Isn't Stanley a cup? And do you have a Stanley, Alexa? Do you have a Stanley?
Well, this is an Owala.
What? Why do you have an Owala? Oh, it's Miller time. Ladies and gentlemen, let's jump into that part of the show. Because you can't have a guest on without, you know. Anyway, if you want to drink with us, have your water. Joe, what do you got? You got water? What do you
I got a couple of things here. Yeah, I have water and
beverages.
My morning coffee because I'm running behind. Yeah. Hey, actually, I just thought about that. I can tell you good morning, but it's not good morning for me and I think Alexa, but I don't know. But for you, it's still morning.
It is still morning. I'm here in Central Time Zone, which is where we're recording from. But you know, enough about me. Like Alexa. Tell me where are you physically located and what is in your cup?
Absolutely. So I'm in Boston. I am in Boston because I work for ASICS, which I know, Rooster, you're very familiar with as we met. There you go. Rep always. But I'm here. I have been here since I actually moved here in 2009 for college. And I just never left. I just love it here. But now I live here in Dorchester, which is still slightly outside the city, with my husband and new husband and my dog and my cat. And I love it here. It's a little taste of city, a little taste of suburb. It's the best. And in my cup is just some water. I drink about three of these bad boys a day. Love water. Big water gal.
What kind of cup is that, though? It's a what? What is the
cup? It's an Owala. Owala.
What is that? Is that like a Boston thing?
I actually got it from On Her Turf, which is an NBC property for women's sports. So.
Oh, as we're in Women's History Month,
that's right.
Look at you. Yeah, well done. I love the correlations and stuff. And so why do you think you're on the Together We Shall podcast? That's the big question.
Oh, you tell me, Rooster.
Oh, there's so many reasons.
That's probably the second best response. The best is you asked me to. Silence. Okay. And then that one was you tell me. Okay, very well. Yeah. Are those real flowers?
Those are.
Man, they look good.
So the thing is, like, no joke, I've had these since Valentine's Day, and they're still kicking.
Absolutely no. Okay.
Wow.
I need to. Who bought them? I need to know where.
Brandon did. I know. Good for him, right?
I can't. We are other than children and dogs, we can't keep anything alive in our household. Like plants, everything. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the water.
So I put a little sugar in the water. I saw that on the internet that if you put a little sugar in the water, it like helps them stay fresh longer. And I think it's working. They're dying a little bit, but.
From here, I've been thinking about it for a while. I'm like, man, those are good looking.
Well, honestly, so right before this call, I had my meeting with Karen, and she was like, I'm usually like over here. And she full on repositioned me entirely because apparently these pieces of artworks right here look a little like feminine art.
Yeah, it's a vagina.
It's not.
It's an oyster shell.
Yeah.
And so she's like, Alexa, you cannot have the vaginas in the back of the podcast. You know, you need to move the flowers in your head. So I was like, sure.
When you moved, like the first time after I asked about the flower, at my split second, I went, oh, shit. Then I was like, that's an oyster. Never mind.
break. Like you said, you work with ASICS, and ASICS has gotten behind our ally development program, which you had an opportunity to participate in. And during that, there was some deep diving and a closed door session with all of the cohort. And there were some elements of your story that just struck a chord with me to the point where I'm like, man, I really think that if Alexa's story is striking these chords with me, there are listeners out there that too could be impacted by her journey and how you've traveled that journey. So that's why you're on, but we're not supposed to get too deep too fast. No. So Joe, nice hat. Why are you wearing that one? Alexa was?
Because I'm on and I'm in Boston.
It is. I mean, baseball season's officially underway, right? Spring training. So that is a reason, but then Alexa being in Boston. But when you joined the team session, Alexa, it said AB, right? Your initials. And then ASICS Boston, there's another AB. And I nerded out on my whiteboard for a second about the AB. And then Rooster said ADB. And now there's AAs.
Synergy, you know? This is all synergy.
It's funny because ASICS is an acronym now that you mention it. What drew you to ASICS? I mean, you were in Boston, you finished up at Suffolk University, you're doing your thing. Yes, listener, I did my research. Alexa went to Suffolk University in Boston. But like, why'd you stay there? You said you loved it, but then what attracted you to ASICS, which happened in like 2019?
Yeah. At that point in my like life, I was very, very into it. I still run very avid runner. But I was very deep in my marathon journey then. And I was just really discovering like the power within running and movement and stuff like that. And I was working at an advertising agency, which if there's any marketing professionals listening, if you ever want to learn anything, work in an advertising agency. I learned more in that job than I have learned ever. It is just the crazy learning. But I was there and I was feeling a little burnt out. And I was like, you know what? Like, I really want to work somewhere that combines all of my favorite things. So like running and wellness and like, obviously I'm a girl, love shoes. Like I've always been a sneaker person. I was like, I want to combine like all of those things. So, and obviously being in Boston, we are the sneaker capital of the US. So there's lots of places to choose from. But I saw a role opening at ASICS, and it was for a social media, like community manager. And I was like, I know social media, like, let's go for it. And when I tell you that I was so annoying about this job, like, I pretty much did not give them an option to tell me no. Like, I was like, no, I don't think you get it. Like, this is my job. Like, this is my job. So I literally did not give them the option. I'm like, you are hiring me, and that is that. And they did. So, but I've been very fortunate. I actually, you know what? My 5-year ASICS anniversary was yesterday. So I've been at ASICS mm-hmm. for 5 years this week. So it's been a great journey, and it's changed a lot, but loving it every day still, truly.
Yeah, no, that's fun. That's exciting. Yeah, it's 5 years to February of 2019. You jump on board there. You're still going strong. But you mentioned before that you were an avid runner and into some things. And Joe, yeah, you ran the Boston Marathon once. Guess who else has ran the Boston Marathon more than once?
What years did you run it?
Oh, boy. 2019 and 2016.
I met you in the middle, I guess. Yeah, I was the year of the snowy, cold. Oh, yeah. It was not enjoyable, but I had the honor of being a guide for a blind runner of ours who was pushing one of our riders. So it was definitely more about the two of them than me, but it was one of those it sucked so bad it was awesome type of things. And it's a weekend I will never forget.
No, that course takes a lot out of you mentally, physically, emotionally. It's a lot.
Now, Alexa, when you ran the Boston Marathon, did you run for a charity?
The first time I ran, I was very lucky. And at the time I worked for Boston Magazine, and we got bibs through work. So that first time I ran, no, but the second time, yes. I ran in 2019 on the Boston Children's Miles for Miracles team, which was just an incredible program. It's really actually a cool program because you get paired with a patient partner. So every single person who gets accepted onto the team, you get your fundraising goals, and then you actually get paired with a patient partner. So you are pretty much training and raising funds for them, which is just, I mean, what's better than that? And I actually got to meet my patient partner and her family, and I went over to their house and had dinner, and we've kept in touch all these years. And it truly was just such an amazing experience. And if I wasn't marathon retired, I would definitely do it again, but never say never.
Yeah, never say never. I too was marathon retired more than once, but ultimately, yeah, I'm currently marathon retired. But if you listen to the last episode, apparently I'm pushing Jill Burwell. But anyway, that's it's a figment of somebody's imagination. But anyway, so yeah, Boston Children's Hospital, Miles for Miracles. Like, there's so many charities to run for. What attracted you to that one?
Well, obviously, I think you alluded, but I was a childhood cancer patient when I was four. I was diagnosed with neuroblastoma in the spine. So I obviously spent a lot of time in children's hospitals. I was not a patient at Boston. I was a patient in Connecticut at Connecticut Children's Hospital. But since I was local to Boston and I just love the work that they do, I was like, this is a no-brainer. I really want to do this. And obviously, like I said, the first time I ran was for me. And the second time I ran, I wanted to be for something bigger. So that's why I chose it. And there was no other charity I was even considering. I was like, it's either Boston Children's or I'm not doing it. So absolute no-brainer. And their program's so amazing. So it was an honor.
And so you said that you get paired up with a child that has mm-hmm. cancer. Is that correct? Or
so not necessarily cancer. They kind of pick from, I mean, I think how it works, and I might be incorrect, so do not quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure all of the patients apply to be a part of the program as well. Well, their parents do on their behalf. But it's all sorts of varying different types of challenges that these children are facing. My patient, Briley.
How did you spell that? Is that Briley or Riley?
Briley with a B.
Whoa.
What?
Briley is my oldest daughter.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's not many Brileys in the world.
Yeah.
Now, there's no way your patient pair is Briley. No way.
No, with a G-H. Okay. With a G-H. With a G-H. Yeah, but she had very severe allergies. like very, very severe, like every type of allergy you can imagine, like dust, air, like everything. So her, she was in and out of the hospital all the time. So her parents and her mom is actually a nurse at Boston Children's. So she, they signed up for the program and, they're just a wonderful, wonderful family.
That's awesome.
No, that's great. That's awesome. You mentioned you didn't go to Boston Children's, but you received your treatment in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And from my understanding, you were like one of the first patients that went to Connecticut's hospital there. What do they still stay in touch with you now? Or are you like in Women's History Month? Like if I was them, I'd be bringing back my first, you know, survivor.
I know. Well, so and I will say this about my time there. So I was so young, I was only 4. So I really, truly don't remember a ton of it. I learned a lot of it, obviously through my parents, because that was their, you know, that was their reality. They were my caregivers. They were the ones, you know, dealing with it. And I think my memory really just blocked out that time, because I think that my mind just genuinely didn't want to remember it. So I really, truly do not remember a ton of my time there. But in recent years, my mom has really been a really, really big supporter of that hospital, always driving awareness, doing fundraisers and stuff like forever. I mean, obviously I'm 32 now and she's been doing stuff for them for the past, math in my head, 20 whatever years. But she's really been involved like with patient care and fundraising and all of that there still. And obviously myself as well through that. So continuing throughout the years to do that, but they were wonderful.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's good. You mentioned your mom. So growing up, what was the family structure? Like what's going on in Alexa's world as a youngster?
Yeah, so when I was diagnosed, I was 4. So it was me and both my parents, my mom and my dad. And then I have a younger brother, Blake, who was 2 at the time. So we're 2 years apart. And so he was very young. I was 4. Mm-hmm. So That was definitely, I mean, and I obviously don't remember this, but through my mom telling me and my dad, I mean, obviously that was very tough to have a 2-year-old at home and a very sick 4-year-old and trying to balance like having this kid at home who still needs and deserves your love and attention and then having a very sick 4-year-old. So that was definitely very, very tough on them, but somehow they managed to do it. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of different, you know, like you're going to the hospital today, you're staying home with Blake and vice versa and figuring out that schedule. But all in all, I mean, I was in and out of the hospital for treatment for over a year. So it was a long time that they were doing that for me. And I can't imagine that was very easy.
Yeah, for sure. And as you grew up and as you started to enter into junior high and high school, obviously you're a cancer survivor, and I would assume we might say in remission, but these things didn't define you. You were not labeled by that experience and you didn't have identity tied to that. You're Alexa and you're going to thrive and you're going to do your thing.
Yeah. And honestly, it wasn't until probably in college that I honestly really started talking about it and telling people, because I just never wanted it to define me. I didn't want to be known as that the girl who had cancer, you know. I wanted to just be normal and be like everybody else. So I really, really didn't start talking about it. And like, I mean, obviously like my close friends knew and stuff like that, but I wouldn't very regularly talk about it until much, much later in life. I think when I just became more comfortable with it.
Well, that's what I wanted to highlight here, because everybody lives their lives their own ways. And who am I to cast judgment or tell you how to live? That's not my intent here. But what I really want to highlight is what you said about, I just wanted to be normal, live normal.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes because of the impact psychologically, et cetera, that having a diagnosis can have, sometimes our caregivers and maybe even ourselves will allow that to become an identity. And I'm not casting judgment if you do. What I'm saying here is if there's a person in your life that has a diagnosis, let them decide if they're going to be identified by the diagnosis.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I definitely give that credit to my parents, because they always were on the same side as me. They encouraged me to do whatever I wanted. You know, like I can play any sport, I could do whatever I wanted, and they supported me 100% and never let me being the cancer kid like stop me from doing anything that I wanted to do. And that is 100% from them and their encouragement.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because I mean, like, as we talked about in the beginning, and then you participating for a little bit in the kickoff of our Ally Development Program, there's a lot of that program that is based around that, you know, the people first language and trying to let them decide what their normal is and not holding anyone back. I mean, out of the 8 students that we have, only 3 of them have really direct family ties to, you know, a disability, we'll just say. You know, the other 5 are good people that, you know, want to help them and be their ally. And you are one of those individuals that's done both, right? You know, are a cancer survivor, but you're also an ally for that being normal.
It's so important. I mean, your identity can be so many things, and it should be up to you to decide what it is, not up to everybody else. It's up to you.
Indeed.
Can you say it again? Neuroblastoma,
like with
blastoma. Is that a type of cancer that has any chance to come back?
Yeah, it's definitely, well, it obviously depends on the person. So mine was in my spinal cord, and I didn't go through chemo or anything like that. I had radiation, and I had 2 surgeries to try to remove most of the tumor. So they did remove most of the tumor. There is a little bit, it's still there to this day, a little tiny piece in my spine, but I think I stopped when I was 18, but I got regular MRIs and checkups on it just to make sure that it didn't kind of grow or impact anything, as I was growing. Obviously, like, your body's changing, so like your spine is one of the things that, you know, changes. So they wanted to make sure that that wasn't impacting anything or growing or anything like that, but all good. I mean, I haven't gone and gotten an MRI since I was 18, and all is well.
Did that, does that type of cancer, I'm ignorant, I guess, does any type of cancer, like, because it was the spine, impact like other elements of the spine, like discs and growth,
no,
I guess, right?
Some interesting side effects that have appeared throughout the year. I mean, so when I was first getting diagnosed, the number one thing my mom noticed was I was tripping a lot. So it was just my ability in walking. So in balance. So she was like, something. And I was in dance classes and stuff like that. I was a little 4-year-old girl. And like, I just like was falling a lot and stuff like that. So my mom was like, something's wrong there. Like, this is not normal for her. So she was very, very persistent that something was going on somewhere in my back spine, whatever. So that was kind of how it got diagnosed. And then since the surgeries and stuff like that, things, obviously I've had 2 surgeries. So I have a big scar on the side of my body over here on the right. And I just have like general like numbness on this right side of my body, like, cause my nerve endings were cut. So I just like can't, like, even my hands, my feet, like I can't feel things as like much as I do on the other side, which is interesting. And then like I only sweat on one side of my body, which is very interesting. So like after I take I go on a run or a spin class, like I have like a big line right down the middle of my face, cause only like one side gets red and I'm like, oh my God, I look so ridiculous.
Want everyone that's watching this to know that like myself and Rooster aren't laughing at you.
You can laugh at me. I don't mind.
I just picture it like, a Batman character, right? Two-Face or no, something, literally. Right? You have like this like perfect face and then this side's just wet, like the part, everything.
I will send, after I go on my next run, I'll send you guys a photo. It's pretty funny.
You'll have to run between now and the next couple of days and send that photo, because we like to put photos that are related to the podcast on our Together We Shall podcast Instagram page. So that's fun. As we go through the years here, what attracted you to Suffolk University? I mean, you have friends that went there, family, like what was the draw there?
I grew up in a very, very small town. I literally graduated high school with 100 kids. So very small, like didn't have a lot of diversity. And I just wanted something bigger. I wanted to live in a city, experience city life. And I was always very independent. So I knew. And Suffolk is interesting because there's no campus. So it's actually just like buildings scattered throughout the city. So by default, you kind of have to be a very independent person to go to a school like that, because you don't have that like campus feel. But that's what I liked about it. I liked how it was very independent. And then that the whole city was my campus. You know, I could get all these cool internships and opportunities anywhere in the city. So that's what kind of drew me there. And I studied abroad while I was there, and I did all these amazing opportunities. So, well, besides the student loan debt, no regrets there, but.
And you studied like communication, marketing, PR type stuff.
Yep. Nailed it. Yep. I was a PR and marketing double major. So I actually shockingly like use my degree every single day, which is great because that's what I do now.
Yeah. So. No, that is cool.
I don't think we ever told the listeners like what exactly at ASICS you do now. Assuming that you have grown the corporate ladder from the social media position that you forced yourself into.
Yeah. So, I mean, it honestly depends on the day. I mean, the thing about ASICS is we, and Rooster can say, we have a very small team. Shockingly, for such a global company, our team is very small, but which is a great opportunity to wear so many different hats. So right now, technically, I am a like content strategy manager. So I work with teams and agencies all over the place and help develop our content strategy and actually make the content, which is awesome. And then I still do some social media. I manage our channels, follow us at ASICS. And then I,
nice plug.
I know you gotta do it. And then I manage our partnerships, as well. So, I work with people like On Her Turf or Wondermind Media and do different partnership campaigns with them. But again, depends on the day. I mean, sometimes I'm heat pressing shirts at an event and the next day I'm running paid social campaigns. It really, really depends, but, I love it.
Yeah. I mean, that's better than the like showing up to work every day and knowing that for the next, we'll say 8 hours, you're only heat pressing shirts for, you know, end of time. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. No, I do love it. It's awesome.
The plug bit reminded me that we mentioned Boston and Marathon retired. So before I forget, I'm going to use this opportunity to plug the Marine Corps Marathon for us, for Ainsley's Angels, for you, also, it's also for the listeners. So if you, you know, got anyone in the office that wants to run and run for a charity on the People's Marathon sold out in D.C., you know, just email Joe at ainsleysangels.org. All you listeners, same thing. If you want to run or roll, we'd love to have you. Thank you, ASICS, for helping us with that event.
Absolutely. No brainer.
On the end of October, the Marine Corps Marathon. What about sports? Like, are you a sports person? I mean, gosh, you live in B-Town. Like, you have to like all the teams or something,
oh,
right?
Oh, man, you're not going to like this answer.
Come on, bring it.
Nothing. I am no sports girl. I'm not.
All right. I can accept that. But if you would have said like any New York team or something, then we would have like just stopped recorded, started this whole thing over with a different guest. But that's fine. I mean, you can.
I mean,
do you go to games just for like the social aspect of any sport? Yeah. All right.
I mean, I go to Fenway Park. I got to get a beer and a Fenway Frank. I mean, absolutely. I'm going to go. But yeah, I'm just like not a big sports fan. Like it's just not my thing. I appreciate it, but it's just like, for example, one of our coworkers invited me to the Celtics game like 2 weeks ago. And I was like, honestly, that'll be a waste of your ticket. Please give it to somebody. Please give it to somebody who will like really, really appreciate it because like I just won't. But like, oh, man, I know it's bad. I know.
No, it's not bad. I appreciate your honesty. I mean, there aren't many I'm assuming there's not a lot of people like you in Boston that say that. Like it's the Bruins or the Celtics or the Red Sox. I mean, somebody's, you know, but that's cool. Own it. It's great.
I mean, my husband is a huge fan and I always rag on him because he's like, yeah, we got to do better this season. And I'm like, there's no we. Like you're not on the team. Like there's no we.
When you talk about baseball, I'm going to make an assumption here. Growing up, you were surrounded by baseball. You mentioned your brother Blake earlier, and he had a love for the game.
Yeah.
So were you at least a fan of Blake's team when he was playing baseball?
So I didn't say that I never played sports. I was varsity captain of the softball team. Like I definitely played sports. Yeah. So I played softball my whole life, my entire life. I played softball, and my brother and my dad was a baseball coach, and my brother was a huge baseball. Both my brothers were huge baseball players. So yeah, I kind of grew up around the sport for sure.
Well, I did also want to spend some time today, frankly, honoring and remembering your brother. I know that that can be a topic that can bring a lot of emotion about, but I do want to just celebrate the fact that what your family has done through, you know, the Blake Foundation, as well as the BAB Kindness Project, to kind of bring this idea of being kind and being good, and just celebrating the good things in life. Of course, we haven't shared with the listener anything about Blake and his story, but if you'd be open to telling us a little bit about that.
So my brother passed away 2 years ago, two and some change. And he unfortunately died in a car accident. So obviously that was very traumatic and sudden and was not the best call to get from my mom. But we definitely had a very challenging relationship, me and him. He was an addict. And if you've ever been around an addict, it comes with a lot of different challenges and all sorts of different emotions. So that was definitely very tough to try to figure out all of that, like all of the challenges that I had with him and then him not being here anymore. That was definitely very, very tough. But growing up, we had an amazing relationship. I mean, we were 2 years apart, so we were like built in friends from day one. So we grew up very close. And then I have another brother, Chase, who is 22. So he came, I was 9 when he was born, and he was just like the best little addition to our family. So I'm the oldest of 3 and obviously oldest girl. So I always felt very responsible for all of them. And then, yeah, I think probably around high school is when he started to get in a little bit of trouble, Blake. He started just acting out and just getting a little not on the same path. And it was very tough because I was the complete
antithesis. Which is ultimately,
that's a lot of answers for me.
Yeah. Basically, you were on a different path.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was the like honor student. I was in every single club. Like I was like total different. And then my brother was going down a very different path. And that was very challenging for me and my parents and for him too. But yeah, he started getting in trouble around high school. And then just kind of never got out of it and just kind of really was struggling like very badly with his mental health. And then addiction came into the picture and he struggled with that, until he passed away in the car accident. It was a struggle for him for many, many years. And, that was very tough on everybody in our family. I mean, the thing that sucks about having an addict in your family is they kind of alienate themselves against everybody, and they kind of forget that. And it's hard to not hold a grudge and be angry about it, but it's just, I still, you know, I loved him. I will always love him. He's my brother. Like I miss him every single day, but it's been very challenging. A lot of different challenges and emotions come with that sort of passing.
And what's the foundation for your brother?
Yeah. So actually great timing to bring this up because we've had some great new updates. So my dad started a foundation, the Blake Foundation, in our hometown and looking to expand. But it's to support young players of baseball in local communities. So my brother grew up playing baseball and it was something that brought him so much joy. Like even later in life, like he was a lifelong Red Sox fan, like ride or die, like sports fan. So that was so important to him. And we wanted to make something good out of this tragedy that happened to our family. And my dad started up the Blake Foundation to help support other young players. So we're doing a lot of different maintenance on the fields and also helping to support young players who may not financially be able to afford to play baseball. Obviously, like, you know, it costs, you know, shoes cost, bats cost, entry level into the league costs. So whatever we can do to help support these young players to just bring some joy into their life, just as, you know, it brought my brother so much joy. So we wanted to kind of continue that love for the sport through the foundation. And my dad is, you know, the hero of that foundation that is 100% on him, his brainchild. And I sit on the board. I think I'm VP. I'm either VP or president. Treasurer. I can't remember which one I am. We just had a board meeting last week. I was like, am I the VP? But we recently just got it. We just finished all the paperwork to be an official charity, which is awesome. What is the 401c, something like that?
Well, that 501? You're it's just so fun. It's a 501c3.
We can have a separate internal podcast about the legality behind
For you though, Alexa, it's all about just the cause and the purpose.
Yeah. We just got accepted as an official charity, which is awesome. And then we just got, we just built a new website, and we have an actual like donation button now, which is great. So we're still working on building that up every day and hoping to make it bigger and better. And then the other side, my mom also started BAB Kindness Projects. Despite all of Blake's challenges and his addictions and stuff like that, he was always the kindest person in the room, no matter where he went. He literally would take his shirt off his back for anybody. He would rescue he literally has rescued multiple animals. Like for some reason, always finds cats, and he would rescue so many cats, but he was just always so kind. And that was just another piece of his legacy that we wanted to continue, was just that kindness and spreading that. So that's why my mom started the project.
I just want to point out to the listeners that BAB is believe in always being kind. Yes. And I love that because it aligns so well with Ainsley's Angels value. We have a value that is positive and kind always, basically valuing and appreciating everyone for who they are, and do so when we lead with our love.
I mean, if you shout out to mom and dad, seems like great humans. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree either. If you think about it, I mean, that's something that my son just ended his basketball season, and now we're in that awkward spring. What's going to start? When's it going to start? What are we signing him up for? He was like, well, can I just play at home? And I'm like, yeah, you can. But the sports and playing sports isn't just about the athletic, going out there and scoring and blocking and all this. It's about the friendships you're going to make and the life lessons you're going to learn. And to this day, I still say that some of the things that I learned on the diamond as a kid, follow me. And most of those are from the years, where my dad wasn't my coach, it was someone else, which is even better, really. But combining athletics and then kindness from your mom's side of the house, those are two things, those are two win-wins, really. So that's really cool that the family's doing that.
Yeah, I agree. And it's been such a joy to watch both my parents create these things for in his honor and just be a part of both of them. There's two different ways you can kind of come out from tragedy, and that's the way they chose, and I am so proud of them. It's truly been awesome to see.
There's an element of our podcast that happens in most of the episodes where there is the proof of serving others and giving of oneself that actually helps with the grieving process. Because the grieving process is continuous. It doesn't ever stop. Would you say that you're seeing your parents actively grieve through this service?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I mean, I have learned a lot about grieving through the past couple years. And I've learned that everybody truly grieves differently, and there's no right or wrong. I think that's the number one thing I've learned, is everybody grieves differently. And even between my parents, although they both have come out very similarly, they both grieved very differently. And I grieved very differently. And my brother grieved very differently. So it really, it can go any way. And however which way you decide to grieve, and that's okay. And that's the way that they chose, is to just make something beautiful out of this. And I personally couldn't have done it. I'm happy to be a part of it, but I don't know how they did it through all of this. And it's pretty crazy to see.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, how everyone grieves differently is huge. I mean, I didn't really probably understand that until Ainsley passed, and seeing how different Rooster and Lori grieved, right? You know, Rooster just went pure Forrest Gump a little bit, you know, to be kind of funny, and just went running. You know, where Lori took it in a different approach. But what I struggle with to this day of grieving on whatever it may be, right? Not necessarily just like death, is understanding that someone's going to grieve differently than I would, and how I can like play my cards to help them. That is like, if someone has that answer, can you tell me? Because I don't know it. And I don't know how to find it. The real struggle. Well, not the real struggle, but that is, you talk about a struggle. Like, how do you, like, how Rooster grieved and then cared for the way Lori was grieving, and vice versa. And, you know, it's not always sunshine and rainbows during those times, but it's, you know, ensuring that you're respectful of the other person during that process. Because I mean, I think Rooster, well, I'm sure someone else said it, but right, grief has no end. Yeah. I've heard Rooster say it, but
yeah. And I think my dad said, and my dad spoke at my brother's funeral, and something he said was like, you know, after the rest of you leave here today, a lot of you will just continue on your days and your normal lives, but for us, like, this is our new life. This is something that we can't just walk away from. This is something that we have to deal with every single day. And that has been a hard adjustment for, you know, my parents. And, you know, I have like classic oldest daughter syndrome, where I just want to, like, I don't care about my grieving. I want to take care of everybody else's first. So that was like my immediate defense, was I wanted to make sure that everybody else was okay. Like, I wanted to make sure my dad was okay. Like, and it's something I work on every single day. Like, I'm always making sure that both my parents and my brother are okay and grieving, and they're doing okay. So it's just, you learn something every single day. I mean,
I want to go down that road a little bit with you, if you'll let me. November of 21 is when Blake passed.
Yeah.
And now we're past the 2-year mark. We're into the third year of grieving. And have you found a way, though, to dive into your own grief journey yet? Or are you still more concerned about mom and dad and your younger brother? Where are you in that journey, and how are you navigating that?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is definitely something I'm still very much working on, and I'm still in that, very much in that caregiver mode, is, you know, how can I care for everybody else first? And I'm the first one to admit this, with every and most things in my life, I'm a huge repressor. So I will repress. I will bury it and we'll never see it again. And I'm very actively trying to work on, like, not doing that and really trying to actually deal with things. So definitely I'm probably in the middle there, trying to figure out the balance between the two on how to care for everybody else, but also to, like, care for myself too. Still working on it, but.
And how is that translating into your new marriage with Brandon? Like, how is he showing up for you in this grieving journey? And have y'all had, like, y'all are newlyweds, man. And to have these levels of conversations, that doesn't happen easier. Sometimes it's easier to just throw it in the closet. And you know, so how's that working out?
Yeah, well, I mean, luckily, like, I mean, we've been together for almost 6 years now, and probably my most favorite thing about him is he is an excellent communicator, and I'm also a very good communicator, so that's never been a problem with us, is we have always been, like, lockstep, no questions, like, always over-communicating everything. And, I mean, I will say, going through something like this, I mean, that he passed away before we were even engaged, I mean, that is hard. Like, sometimes just, it's a very helpless feeling. He said that multiple times. He's like, I feel so helpless. Like, I can't do anything. And, you know, I was like, you know what? Just you being here is enough. Like, that's all. Like, I just need you to be here. That's it. But that was definitely, I mean, that was hard on him. And I definitely recognize that. Like, that was hard. And you know what? He has been absolute rock, not just for me, for my family. I mean, he showed up big time, like, no questions asked. Like, he was there, like, absolutely. And, you know, that really, like, sealed the deal for me more than anything. I was like, that's the person I'm going to be with for, I mean, I already knew before that, but I was like, that's the man that I want with me forever. Like, he stood by me and my family, no questions asked.
And I think that's really beautiful. And thank you for sharing that. I think that what I would love for people to hear is this idea, like, that men sometimes feel like they have to fix it. And Alexa, you're going into caregiver mode. You're feeling like you might need to kind of fix it too for mom and dad.
Yep.
But for you and your husband to have a conversation that was surrounded around you communicating to him, just need you to be here. Like, that goes so far to give him reassurance that he's doing the best that he can to fix by just being present.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to highlight that element of it for whomever out there is struggling in their active grieving journey, to know that just having someone be there or being that person for someone is enough. It's okay. It's enough. You know,
yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. And I think it's very much too, like, not being afraid to ask what people need. I was actually in a yoga class one time, and the instructor was saying how she was talking to a friend and she was going through something hard. And the instructor said to her, she's like, I'm going to stop you. She's like, I need you to tell me what you want from me. Do you want me to listen, or do you want me to give you advice and talk back? And I think about that, like, all the time. And I think it applies to so many different things in your life. And I have taken that, like, in every relationship I have now, like, is with my husband, with my friends. I'm like, how do you want me to show up? You know, and that's kind of the conversation me and Brandon had. You know, he was like, what do you need from me? What do you need me to do? And I think that's absolutely huge, is being able to have those conversations and having that communication level where you can ask that. And it's so important and so valuable.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, absolutely. That's being an ally, you know, to circle it all the way back to where we started. Being an ally is showing up and making space, or providing space, or being present, or taking action as requested. And that piece about, do you want me to listen, or do you want me to respond?
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, Joe and I took this class with Covey, you know, long, long time ago, you know, about, you know, seeking first to understand. And he talked about that 7 successful habits of being, you know, good human, frankly, seeking first to understand, then to be understood. You know, it goes so far. So, man, we get to the hour mark of the podcast, and there's like a whole nother hour that I'd like to go down, because this is the good stuff. These are the things that, like, when I was, frankly, your age, Alexa, I wasn't talking about this stuff. I certainly didn't understand many of these concepts. And so one of the reasons that we have the podcast is to show how together we shall accomplish so much more. But how can we be together? How can we share space? And you've highlighted that in the past couple of minutes in a beautiful way. So, Joe, you've been listening really well and seeking first to understand. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny too, right? The communication, you know, that the word communication was said a lot just then, and tying back to our ally development program, that was what our guest speaker talked about this week in our lesson, was communication, and also communication as it ties to being a leader, as these individuals are going to go and try to be, you know, allies, leader allies. Communication is freaking hard. You know what I mean? Like, both sides, send, receive, filtering out the noise, you know, not necessarily physical noise, but just the noise, and being able to do it. I know it is one of the top things that I struggle with. I mean, I have written on this whiteboard over here, some notes that I'm supposed to be working on. Ashamed, but not ashamed to say that in the last week, since I was given this assignment, it's blank. Cause I look at it every day. There's a whiteboard on the door in my closet. So I have to go by it to get clothes. And I just haven't been able to, I guess, communicate in my brain what I'm supposed to then put onto this whiteboard. And like Rooster said, like, being able to articulate that at, I'm not saying a young age, I'm not that much older, but like, I wasn't doing that 8 years ago, for sure. I'm not doing it now.
I'll tell you though, like, I wouldn't be able to do those things if I hadn't gone through everything else before. You know, I think it's all of these things that have happened throughout my life, you know, from a young age, that has really just taught me like how to be in these types of situations and what I need and how to get there. You know, I think that's, I mean, and also too, like communication, like it's so vulnerable. And I think that's why a lot of people struggle with it is like, and able to like communicate and let people in, like you have to like let people in, and that's hard. That's really, really hard. And like being able to self-advocate, that's tough. That's tough. Very vulnerable.
It's, yeah, you nailed it. And like, I've always joked, but for a long time joked that like being comfortable, being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I've started saying it more to myself over the last year or so as I've gone down this rabbit hole of cold therapy. While the saying makes sense, you know, get comfortable being uncomfortable. I'm comfortable being uncomfortable because I can just shut it down.
Yeah.
It's not the right level of comfort, but that's what my brain is saying. Like, this is awkward, so I'm going to make it comfortable by just smile and nod. And then, but in the end, that stuff builds up and it's not great. Now I have a blank whiteboard on, you know, an assignment.
You'll get there.
If you haven't picked up, Alexa, I said the real reason we have, you know, Together We Shall podcast is for all the reasons I mentioned earlier. But at its core, it's really Joe and my therapy session each week. So thank you for being
our therapist. It's my second therapy session.
Good for you.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, there was, again, as Marines, as career Marines, like you don't have vulnerability as one of the leadership strengths or traits.
Shut up.
And it wasn't until... Right. You know, and it wasn't for me until really my journey with the Travis Manion Foundation and really deep diving into some elements of my grieving process and who I am that taught me that vulnerability as a strength. And I will share with you, Alexa, that, you know, Ainsley's passing was in 2016. And if I was to look at where I was in the middle of 2018, which is about where you are in your current grieving cycle, and I'm not comparing the grieving process here, but I can tell you that I was not in the spot I am today with my grief as where I was in 18. And it's because we all grieve differently and at different paces. But I think I like to think that based on what you've shared with me, dare I say this, I think the best is yet to come for you in your grieving journey. And at some point in the next 1 month to 10 years, you're going to have these huge release moments that are going to be so just emboldening and so fulfilling. So a little bit of me is excited for you to have that. And frankly, I shouldn't be so naive. I'm really hoping that you have that because not everybody gets to have that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I think I will. I think my whole family will. But
yeah,
day by day.
The best is yet to come, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Who said that? Who was the first person to say that? You know what I mean?
Do we give credit to Frank, right? Sinatra? Sinatra? Is that who gets the credit?
No, Cabello.
Yeah. Frank Cabello gets the credit. Yeah. What a good time. So, I mean, I think we could keep going for a while, but frankly, you know, Alexa, the things I wanted to touch on today and the reason that I really wanted to have you come on, we've met those objectives. And I hope that you're able to walk away from the chat today feeling a little uplifted, you know, having that opportunity to exhale a little bit.
No, absolutely. And, you know, any help to anybody else going through something similar, here to help. That's all part of it.
Yeah. Joe, we're going to give Alexa the last word because, you know, we're kind that way. Is there anything you would like to say before we go on mute?
No, I think, you know, it was a great conversation. Thank you for joining us. And, you know, just, you know, like a lot of the conversations that we have with our guests, right, it's much bigger than anyone that we're ever going to have on this show, if you would. So, right, if you're struggling with, you know, addiction or just bad behavior or whatever, you know, use that lifeline, phone a friend, phone one of the many 1-800 numbers that we have in this country and talk to someone. Just talk to someone. And that's what we definitely want folks to know here, especially, you know, when it comes to addiction and then even things like, you know, the cancer, right? You know what I mean? Rooster and I had a friend last night post about a regular checkup on cancer, and it's like, just make sure you're checking in on yourself and others, and then together we shall hopefully get through this.
Yep.
Yeah. Beautiful. Alexa, thank you again. We like to give you the final word. So as you are thinking about what you want to say, keep in mind that this is what we're leaving people with as they go on. I'm going to put all the pressure on the communications major here. Like, what you say is going to stick with them for the rest of the day.
Oh, gosh. No pressure. No, I'm just kidding. No, first off, thank you guys for, allowing me on, and then also just giving all your guests and your listeners the space to think about these things and talk about them. I think listening and thinking and talking is so important. And I know we've talked about communication. I could talk about it all day. I think it's one of the most important life skills you'll ever learn. And, you know, if I leave you with one thing, it's just talk and lean on the people in your corner and don't be afraid to be vulnerable, looking at you, Joe. And, you know, just everybody's different and just do your best every single day. That's all you can do.
You know what? I got enough.
Time. He's in charge.
We're done. This was good.
Yeah, we're done here. The structure of this building has reached its capacity.
Find your people, and if they make you feel sexy, even better.